What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Awesome Village. I am Greg, and joining me is...
John.
Glenn.
Ryan.
All right, Glenn, so what is the new update on our box office smash
competition? We're getting close to the end here.
To the end.
To the end. So Greg's team is complete this week with his opening of Equalizer 2. John only has two movies left. He has this week's Mission Impossible Fallout and Christopher Robin, which opens on August the 3rd. Ryan only has one movie left with The Meg that opens on August the 10th, and I was complete first. So this was an interesting week at the box office. Kind of everything overperformed. So yeah.
Except Mamma Mia, right?
No, they both overperformed.
Really?
They both did more than the
estimate. Oh, that's right. The surprise was that Mamma Mia was on number one, but it still did
but
well.
But it still did better than they thought it would. Equalizer did come out number one at the box office. It made about $36 million U.S., $39 million worldwide. Mamma Mia, the difference is is much bigger, where it made roughly $34 million U.S. and $77 worldwide. Ryan, your Hotel Transylvania 3 is doing fantastic. In U.S., it's $91 million. Worldwide, $207 million. So, as of right now, well, I'll start with domestic. Greg is in first place with no movies left, with a domestic total of $900 million.
All
right. I'm right behind him with $869 million. You are right behind me with $866 million with one movie left. And John is in third with two movies left with $294 million, one of which is Mission Impossible Fallout. So
you look so dejected.
Your team pretty much is relying on Tom
Cruise right now. Well, I mean, you know, we talked about how, yeah, they overperformed, but, you know, Mamma Mia didn't beat Equalizer like I thought it was going to, and you know why? Because it's on my fantasy team.
However,
that's why.
If you go to worldwide, we're still in the same order, but it's Greg's in first place with $2,414 million. I'm behind him, right behind him again, with $2,136 million. Then there's Ryan with $1,571 million, and John with is $594 million with the two movies left. So Tom Cruise is pretty much he's your only hope.
Yeah, but once again, we don't care about the world. That's just for interesting perspective.
We don't care about the world.
No, we're Americans. We want to know about domestic, and the domestic's still pretty close. I think John still. I mean, Tom. This Mission Impossible. The Rotten Tomato meter is at 95%.
Yeah, it's
and I'm hearing like buzz that it's like the best of the Mission Impossible movies and one of the best action movies.
But it's on my fantasy team, so right. It's going to probably bomb.
I know you got to finish strong, man.
I don't think it will. I don't think it'll bomb. It might underperform, which I'm not expecting. But I don't know if it'll be enough to catapult to the top.
And I will say, the funny thing enough, Skyscraper opened in China this week, and most of your money came from that. Like it went nuts overseas.
But which score? We're just going with domestic.
Domestic.
Though, right?
But yeah, Ben was just doing the worldwide just because...
I was just kind of curious to see if it would be the same. And, I don't know, it's kind of just... I knew that Infinity War would be a juggernaut, but what I wasn't... it eclipsing literally everything this summer. But, I mean, we've all had some standouts and some sleepers, but...
I'm calling it right now. I'm close enough to where I think the Meg is going to push me over the top, and I'm going to beat Greg...
Jason Statham.
It's good to have dreams.
It's all coming. It's Shark Week this week, and then
it is Shark Week.
I mean, yeah, we went to the aquarium.
We did.
Those sharks are underwhelming.
There's Shark Week stuff everywhere when you go there now.
Really?
Uh-huh.
But I mean, the sharks at the aquarium, they're just like sand tiger sharks. They're just they look weird. They don't do anything. They just sort of barely lumber in the water.
Yeah, you know there was like a hawk just kind of chilling.
Yeah, and an owl too.
And an owl, yeah.
Yeah, which is odd. They just have these weird
birds of prey,
right? It's just sort of sitting around watching you.
Yeah. But so yeah.
All right. So guess what? We didn't watch shit on TV. Well, I shouldn't say that. We didn't watch anything new.
Yeah.
Well, there's also not a lot on right now or that we can really update?
I did finish Glow. I mean, you pretty much summed everything up. I thought it was a really good season. They went some interesting ways with it. I thought Bash's character was actually really good this season. He had some. So,
do you think he's gay?
I don't know.
Like the weird,
it's kind of hard to tell.
The way he had that weird like wall thing, and then yeah. The whole thing with the butler. I don't know. It's sort of. And then I love that episode with Welfare Queen.
Yeah.
I thought that was astonishing.
Yeah, it was really good. Good times.
There you go.
All right.
I mean, I did watch the new Puppy Dog Pals.
Yeah. Vampirina had a new episode, too. Yeah. So, and there's always some Peppa Pig going on in my house.
Yeah, but yeah, Puppy Dog Pals, Bob got a pet fish.
Oh, awesome.
And yeah, it got lost. So, yeah. So Bingo, Rolly, and Hissy had to go track
they went, down. They went on a mission.
They went on a mission.
Yeah. I have no idea what the hell they're talking about, Greg. Do you?
I'm just kind of sitting back and enjoying.
You see, Bingo and Rolly, they're two puppies, and they bark and chew.
They bark and chew. It's a show called Puppy Dog Pals, and we both have children that are under the age of 2. And they're obsessed with Puppy Dog Pals and Vampirina.
Yeah, well, the Puppy Dog Pals was created by Harlan Williams, the psycho serial killer from Something About Mary.
What the fuck is a Vampirina?
Vampirina is a little girl who's... They were a normal vampire family in Transylvania, but then her parents decided they wanted to move to Pennsylvania and start a scare B&B. Her parents, Boris and Oksana, who are voiced by James Vanderbeek and Lauren Graham.
And their pet gargoyle, Gregoria.
Gregoria is Wanda Sykes.
Voiced by Wanda Sykes.
And Demi the Little Ghost. I was like, that guy, the voice sounds kind of familiar. And I look it up. It was Stanley Rothenstein from My Cousin Vinny is the voice of this little ghost guy.
Yeah, she might be blue with pointy teeth, so, but she's just like us.
I wonder if the audience can hear the division in the Awesome Village between the two men with newborn babies and the two without. Because I have no idea what
And let me just
about.
Say... We're not saying that we enjoy these shows.
I know, but
we're
you're
just saying this is what
them.
We have seen All this I'm week.
Say, I ran into a friend of mine that you know he's a defense attorney, and when you know he asked how the baby was, and I said you know we've been watching you know she loves Disney Junior and we're talking about Puppy Dog Pals and Vampirina, and he's like, oh, you're lucky. At least you get Disney. When mine was a kid, all I had to watch was fucking Barney.
Yeah.
Oh man, no hell with that.
And my kid watches. She loves Peppa Pig too. And
yes,
and
so
the dad in Peppa Pig is like always hurting himself and like doing stupid things. And I just hear my wife going, "Oh, isn't Daddy Pig silly?" And I'm like, "No, Daddy Pig's a stupid asshole, and he should have his children taken away from him." But that doesn't happen in the show. They don't get into that.
I actually, because my kids are old enough to where I can leave them alone. I leave the room when Peppa Pig and all that crap comes on.
I will say, though, the one thing that is nice about Peppa Pig is that's the one show that my daughter will actually sit there and watch without, like, doing anything else. So when she wakes up, like, nice and early in the morning, I'm not quite ready to get up, I just turn Peppa Pig on and just sit her in the bed next to me, and I go back to sleep for half an hour while she watches Peppa Pig.
Felicity's like that with Puppy Dog Pals. She'll sit there and just stare.
Yeah.
I thought it was weird the first time I saw it, but Baby Einstein was a godsend with a newborn, because that is the only thing that a newborn will sit and watch.
Yeah.
But,
I like Voltron.
Yeah.
Voltron's good.
That is my as long as it's not the cars.
There is a little show that comes on every now and then that's called it's Star Wars Forces of Destiny.
Oh, yeah, I watched that.
It's all these little like mini stories about all the female characters in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah. In fact, they just did one with Kira from Solo.
Yeah.
It's good. All the original voices, Felicity Jones and... they all do them. So,
Glenn, you got to go to the theater and see Three Identical Strangers.
Oh, yes, I did.
All right.
So... Do y'all know about this movie?
I've never heard of it.
I'm guessing it's about three people that look very similar.
All right, so I'll tell you. I don't want to give away. I want people to go see this, so I'm not going to give away kind of the twist. I'll just give you the premise. So it starts with this guy. It's 1980. He's 19 years old. He's going to college for the first time, and he's scared as hell. He's first time away from home, and he drives to this little community college in upstate New York. He's in this old beat up car, which these guys, he's so charismatic. He calls this car the Old Bitch, is the name of his car.
Makes sense.
So he says he gets up to school and he gets out and he's very nervous. And as he gets out, people just keep looking at him and saying, "Hey, how's it going, man? Welcome back." And like, he's like, "I've never been here before." And like, girls are coming up and kissing him, and guys are high fiving him, and people are hugging him and like picking him up off the ground. And he thinks he's in some sort of Twilight Zone episode. And then somebody comes up and he's like, "Good to see you again, Eddie." And he's like, "My name's not Eddie." And he's walking through the campus, and again, someone, "Eddie, good to see you again. I didn't think you were coming back this year." And he's like, "My name's not Eddie." And then three or four other people keep calling him Eddie. So he
Did
finally,
you say, my name is Greg?
So he finally gets to his dorm room. And then the roommate opens the door and sees him. And he said all the blood went out of his face because he says, I know Eddie. And Eddie wasn't coming back this semester. And the first words out of his mouth were, are you adopted? And the guy's like, well, yeah, by matter of fact, I was. And he's like, is your birthday in June? And he's like, yes, June 21st. And he's like, I can't believe I'm telling you this, but you've got a twin. And he's like, what do you mean I got a twin? And he's like, I'm telling you, one of my best friends was here. He's not coming back this year, but his name's Eddie, and it's you. So they make a phone call to Eddie. They're telling him everything. They're going through the adoption agency and everything, and it's all matches. So they go over to Eddie's house, and they knock on the door, and he says, who opens the door but me? And after talking all this, it turns out that they were long-lost twins. And, the story goes all over the news, and then it cuts to this third guy who's this, like, blue-collar guy, and he gets home from work, and his wife hands him this newspaper and says, you need to read this. And he looks at it, and he's like, what's this, a fake newspaper? There's two pictures of me here. And they're like, no, read the story. And it turns out there was a third. It was triplets that were... They all came from the same adoption agency, and
they wanted you to watch them.
And they found each other, and just by happenstance. And then things get a little like, and they're 19. They kind of become celebrities. There are all these clips of them on like Phil Donahue and stuff like that. And they're going to Studio 54, and they're partying. And while this is happening, their parents are furious because they find out that. This whole time that there are these triplets that were split up, and then it gets really weird when you find out kind of what happened and the reasons they were split up. And
I've never even heard of this movie.
I'm not going to give away the twist, but it's crazier than anything that I've seen in a scripted movie.
Was there an organization behind it called Neolution? Because it sounds like Orphan Black.
And who's in this?
I mean, it's a documentary. It's a CNN film. So, I mean, I went to the movie.
It's not a true story.
Oh, it's absolutely a true story.
Really?
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, and it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And
you
like,
saw this in the theater?
Yeah. Me and Sandra went and saw it.
I didn't even hear about this.
Yeah, it is so crazy that, the fact that all this really happened. And, I mean, what I'm telling you is very kind of, it's like, oh, that's cute, but there's a twist, and it sounds weird to say with a true story, that literally made my skin crawl.
So, here's my... Alright, the reason why I'm having trouble with this, you're saying it's a true story. Why are they filming this, like, beforehand? Like,
well, there was a couple of recreations.
Oh, alright, okay, all right. Now I got it.
Yeah, they did some recreations, but they're interviewing them all now.
Alright, okay,
and, they did recreations back in the, the late 70s, early 80s.
Gotcha.
And then back before, like, when they were children, and... I mean, there was this adoption agency that catered to specifically, like, Jewish families in northern New York, and it's, like I said, I wish I could go more into the plot, but I want people to go see this. This movie is fantastic. It's one of the best movies of the year.
Wow.
I can't see anything beating this for the best documentary. In fact, they announced that they're making a feature film version of this, because it's blowing up so much,
I'm intrigued. I haven't even heard of this movie.
Yeah, it's playing at the Elmwood Theater right now. So we went and saw it. Definitely go check out Three Identical Strangers. I'm tempted to give this a 10. Wow. You know what? I'm giving it a 10. Fuck it.
Wow.
So octuplets plus twins.
That's the first time anything's ever gotten a 10 on our podcast.
Wow.
Because I want people to go see this movie. It's, like I said, it's just... I've never seen anything like it before, and it really, like, me and Sandra talked about it all night after. I mean,
that says a lot, like, when you see something that you end up talking about, like, a lot afterwards.
Right. And I wish I could tell y'all some of these things.
I know. Yeah.
But definitely go see it so we could talk about it.
From tens to not so much, Mamma Mia also came out this week. Here We Go Again.
Yeah. So I went and saw this. I actually had kind of a long-standing commitment with this. My mother has been a huge ABBA fan her entire life. So growing up, I heard a lot of ABBA in the house. And I took her to see the first Mamma Mia, and she loved it. You know, it's fun.
10 years ago.
10 years ago, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Do you know Mamma Mia opened the same day as The Dark Knight?
That is just staggering.
Yeah, so I mean, we went and saw the first one. She loved it, you know, with all the music. I mean, it is what it is. It's those type of musicals. I mean, they're usually kind of silly, not very good stories, but just the music is good in them. So as soon as she heard that they were making this one, she made me promise to take her to go see it. So we went and saw Mamma Mia 2 the other night. And
well, don't call it by its title.
Mamma Mia. Is it even 2 or is it no. Mamma Mia? Just Mamma Mia, again. Here we go again.
So let's cut to the chase. What did your mom think of it?
She really liked it, just like she liked the first one.
I only recently watched the first one. I'd only seen clips of it. So I watched the first one, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know, a cool little way of using ABBA music, and I thought it was a fun little movie. Enjoyed it. Didn't think it was, you know, phenomenal, but I had a good time. Made me want to revisit ABBA songs.
Yeah.
And I went and saw this one. So to kind of catch you up to speed, I didn't have the same reaction to this one that I did to the first one.
Well, yeah. I never saw this. The first one, I will say, was very charming.
Yeah.
So, like, when it comes to musicals, I find them to be kind of tricky because they're not my bag, baby.
Yeah.
But, like, Grease, I love. I'll watch anytime it's on. Hairspray, I'll watch anytime it's on.
Well, you see, the difference is Grease and Hairspray are musicals where the music was written for those musicals, whereas Mamma Mia is kind of like Rock of Ages, where it's like the songs are the stars
and
of the movie.
I was about to say, and I didn't really like Rock of Ages.
I mean, Rock of Ages, the story is nothing special whatsoever, but right. It's like the songs are what you go to see it for, and that's kind of how Mamma Mia is.
Which is what scares me about the sequel to something like
that. Yeah, but that's the thing, though. That's what I find with this, and kind of as I thought about it, you have to view it in a different light, kind of like we talked about last week, certain movies you have to do a sliding scale. And it's the same thing with this. The thing that I find is the other one benefited from being a stage play for a while because basically they were able to work out things and make it make sense, and it was a little bit more cohesive. This one felt like they jammed a lot of subplots into it, and I'm sitting there watching it with this feeling of I'm not really enjoying this, but am I wrong? And then I turn to the side, and the person I was with looks at me and is like, this is fucking terrible.
And they made it unnecessarily depressing, too.
Yeah, well, that's
because
the thing.
And this is not a spoiler. You find out in the first 5 minutes of the movie that Meryl Streep's character from the first one, you know, she got her happy ending at the end of it, and this movie takes place like 2 to 3 years later, and she's been dead for a year. So it's like, oh, that sucks. And the whole thing is about her when she was younger.
Like Tracy Bond.
And Lily, and Lily James plays young Meryl Streep, Donna.
It's the period of when she conceived Amanda Seyfried's character.
Right.
And the thing with it is, it almost seemed to me like they were trying to film the prequel to the movie and didn't have enough material. Like, well, shit, we had to make it a frame story.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where it goes. Now, I think all the performers are very good in it.
Yeah.
You know, Pierce Brosnan even, you know, not the music so much.
He's
but
a
like,
god.
His performance
the
is
one
really
thing
good.
I will say, he did the SOS song in the first one, and it was god-awful. And this one, they actually just show him looking at some pictures of, you know, his now deceased wife, whatever. And he just kind of sings, like, the chorus of it, just kind of, like, to himself. Like, it's not like a production.
And he's sad,
and
so his voice
and
is
it sounds cracking. So, it sounds like just if one of us was just, like, singing the chorus of a song, like, you know, in the shower or something. It didn't sound bad because it wasn't meant to sound impressive.
When you said he sang SOS,
that's the name of a song.
The Rihanna SOS song?
No, the ABBA song SOS.
Okay, every
no Rihanna song.
That's why I was a little
confused. It's 100% ABBA in these movies.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But, the trailer shows you, too, that Cher's in it. Her character is really unnecessary.
Completely unnecessary.
Cher is never unnecessary.
Well, no, but, like, that's the thing, like the character is only in it for one reason, and that's to include this other song in it, is pretty much how it works.
It's because she's Cher, Greg.
Well, I mean, she's fine in it when she's in it, but, like, yeah, the movie as a whole is
she's
kinda
an Oscar winner, Greg. It's Cher.
And we're watching it, and this old guy that's this new caretaker of the whole thing takes place in Greece. And
as did the first one.
And they're reopening this hotel, and this old guy who's the new caretaker of the hotel, played by Andy Garcia, and my mom keeps looking at me and goes, is this one not in Greece like the first one was? I'm like, yeah, it's in Greece. And she's like, why is there like a Spaniard in there? And I was like, I don't know.
Because he's Andy Garcia.
I was like, he's Andy Garcia, and I don't think
Andy
they
Garcia's
care.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
He stole the whole movie in Book Club.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean,
grade this thing.
I will say, though, for a movie that wasn't very good, every second that Lily James is on the screen, I just cannot take my eyes off her.
I enjoyed the musical performances.
Yeah.
Her and Amanda Seyfried, you can't take your eyes off them.
And who's the two friends, the older versions from the original were still good.
But in the younger versions, they cast perfect.
They cast well.
Because young Christine Baranski is like pitch perfect Christine Baranski.
I get the feeling Dominic Cooper wasn't in it at all.
He wasn't in it much. No. Probably because he was filming other stuff and they just kind of wrote around him a little bit. Yeah, he's in the very beginning and he's in the very end.
He must have been down in New Orleans filming
Preacher. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. That's one of the things. It's kind of that's another plot element that's a little bit contrived in it. It's just kind of more stuff to force into it.
It was forced into it. And the other thing that I will say, a positive, even though the acting isn't that great or whatever, but the guy that plays the young Colin Firth character, I thought he did a very good Colin Firth impression.
He really did.
But anyway, so I mean, Lily James stole the whole thing. If it wasn't for her, I probably would give this movie a 2.5 or a 3. But I mean, I give it a. And plus, I do really enjoy the music. I always got some good music, so I'm actually it bumped it up a bunch for me. The music and Lily James. So I'm gonna give it a 5.5.
I'm gonna give it a 4 just because I felt like I was a chore getting through it by the end of it. But I do have to recognize all the performances
and I would say the original one I probably would have also given like a 5.5, maybe a 6.
I would have given the original one a 6.
Yeah,
I had a good time with it.
So
the three of us, you, me, and Glenn, got to see The Equalizer last night.
I wish that Rob Reiner from Wolf of Wall Street was with us. Rob Reiner, I'm sorry.
The Equalizer 2.
Who the hell was Rob Reiner?
That was the guy who used to be the DJ down here.
I was thinking about the football coach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Rod Reiner was the guy that was on the radio down here.
But yeah, Equalizer 2 picks up. It's a sequel to the movie with Denzel Washington based off of a TV series where a former CIA agent is basically righting wrongs on a local level.
Yeah.
So take us through a little bit of the plot of this, Sean.
So it kind of leaves off where the first one ended, where he's just kind of... He's not even so much for hire. It kind of makes it look like he's going to be for hire at the end of the first one, but he's just basically just seeing wrongs that are happening to people, and he's going and...
Well, he's kind of for hire, but not for what you think.
Right. He's a Lyft driver. And and when he sees that people are being victims or whatever, he steps in and does his thing and, you know, kicks ass when he needs to and just gives people words of advice.
Sage wisdom
when he needs to. And in this one, his... one of his only friends is killed on an assignment.
And it's important to point out, too, it's one of his only friends that knows he's still alive.
Right. Because nobody really knows he's alive. He was supposedly killed in an explosion on an assignment.
That's how he retired.
And
like Nick Fury.
And she's one of the only people that knows he's still alive. And she comes and visits him every now and then and kind of keeps him balanced a little bit.
Brings him soup.
And she's still semi-retired from the CIA, but she's on an assignment, and she gets killed. So he basically goes and uncovers what's going on and, you know, deals with it.
I felt a lot like about this one as I did about the second Jack Reacher movie, where I loved the first one so much that this one had a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
And didn't do what I wanted it to do.
I really like the character that Denzel plays, Robert McCall, but I thought this movie was terrible.
I thought it was fine.
I just thought it was stupid. But I really like the character.
Well, I mean, the thing that I was telling John that I think I kind of suffered from is the fact that, like, the original one, like the Home Depot scene at the end is such a cool thing because it's like an everyday...
Yeah.
Thing, whereas this kind of makes like a traditional action movie. I think I even talked about this when we're walking back to the car. But this movie's kind of they try to weave too much of his they couldn't decide if they wanted to do too much of his daily everyman hero-ness or his CIA background.
Yeah.
And it kind of suffers a little bit from
and
that.
Yeah, and what the first movie was, it was also a lot of people that thought that they were extreme badass people who just totally underestimated him because they didn't know what he was. This is all people that are like him and know exactly who he is.
Right.
And so it didn't have the same kind of charm as the first one. And there were scenes where it did, and the opening sequence on the train was like that. And then there was another scene in a project building.
Yeah.
That kind of felt like that, but for the most part it wasn't. You just watched Denzel Washington beat up a bunch of people with his crazy pinky finger, you know.
I have no reference to this cuz I haven't seen any of them, but a friend of mine at work told me that he's kind of like John Wick but not as fast. Which
maybe
for some reason
he's closer to
for some reason
he's
made
closer
me laugh.
To Taken.
Right? Yeah, he's a lot more hand to hand combat stuff. Not as much. I mean, he does use guns sometimes
random things like credit cards in this.
Yeah,
but
and in the first one, it's a pretty cool scene where he uses a corkscrew and like a shot glass or something. Yeah.
But it's directed by Antoine Fuqua, just like the first one was. And I'm a
big
fan.
Didn't he do Training Day?
Yeah, he did Training Day. He did the first one. He did Replacement Killers with Mira Sorvino.
He's done some good movies.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of his. And I don't know. I just feel like this is his first sequel, and I just think maybe he didn't want to do it.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know that he wrote the script.
Some of the things, just the way the movie was put together, I thought was sloppy. This is just my opinion.
No, I agree with you.
Usually when you see movies, there's what they call a cold open that introduces you to the character. This movie had two cold opens.
Yeah.
And I don't think they were both necessary. And then there were lots of subplots, like, involving the lift, like, his passengers. Like, the old man, which, by the way, it was driving me crazy who it was. It was the boss from Being John Malkovich, if you remember.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The old Holocaust survivor. And then, the kid Miles from the kid that was in Twilight. Moonlight.
You're talking about the guy who pissed Orange?
Yes. Yeah, the kid from Moonlight was the artist that he
Oh,
was.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Bill Pullman and Melissa Leo, they were kind of... They're very talented actors, and they really didn't get much.
They were both kind of wasted.
Yeah.
She had maybe a little bit more than Bill Pullman, but I mean, it wasn't like there wasn't much of anything. And then there's another point where you see, oh look, there's Bill Pullman, and then you're like waiting to see him again for the rest of the movie. He just never appears again.
Right.
No mention of him or anything.
And I mean, there's just like I don't know the script. I'm not sure who wrote it, but I mean,
it was the same person that wrote the first one. But I mean, the first one was a much better script.
I mean, this one you could see what was coming a mile away.
Because I can't determine whether I think it was the directing that was so much bad. It was just the script was just really sloppy.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was just a sloppy movie. But yeah. I will say Denzel Washington is charming as hell.
He is, and I mean I had a good time watching it. Not as much. I love the first one.
In my opinion, one of the best actors of all time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hands down.
Deservedly. I mean, but I don't know. If we were scoring this, I think I'd have to give this a 4. I can't.
It's actually not as bad as what you've said.
I'd give it a 6.
I would also give it a 6.
Just because of Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
Because that man.
I would have given the first one probably a 9.
I would agree with you there.
Are you Jesus?
8.5 or 9? I love the first one.
It was such a good.
Oh, and we didn't mention Pedro Pascal was.
Pedro Pascal's in it, yeah.
And he was fine. He kind of reminded me something similar that he did to. I don't want to give away plot twists, but and he did a movie called the Kingsman: Golden Circle, and the characters are a little similar.
A little similar, yeah.
But Equalizer 2.
So, yeah, I mean it's something. I mean, if you really like the first one, I mean. Watch it when it comes on HBO or something, or maybe get it out of the Redbox. Don't waste your money.
Okay.
There are plenty of better action movies. If someone was asking me for an... I'd recommend Skyscraper over this, honestly.
I don't think I would. I think I'd go with this over Skyscraper.
I would tell them to watch both John Wick movies.
Yeah.
Every time. Anytime. Even they want a good love story.
did you see the picture from the filming of John Wick 3 of him riding the horse?
I did not. Holy hell. He's on a horse?
Yeah.
And Halle Berry's in the next one. Kidding me?
We're not kidding
me. So there was some news that came out about the Joaquin Phoenix, Martin Scorsese produced.
I like that Joaquin.
Joker film. And that is that Robert De Niro is going to be in it. I didn't get to read the full article, but what if...
In principle, I don't like a Joker origin movie.
I kind of agree. Like, the Joker is... That's the same thing way I feel about Venom. Venom doesn't need its own movie.
Yeah,
it's a character
that
needs
that.
To be used sparingly.
His... The unknowing of the character is what's intriguing about him. So,
or, I mean, they made the animated movie, The Killing Joke. That's all you need to have.
Right.
And I didn't even really like that. I mean, the movie was okay. Because it was an anime movie, it didn't really tie into the whole Dark Knight trilogy or the original Batman trilogy. But I just like not. That's what I loved about the Joker. You don't know where he came from. You don't know why he's so screwed up. I don't want to know.
But that was more of just in the Nolan version, right? I mean,
even in the
comics, like they've gone through several iterations, and the best version of the Joker, like Ryan's saying. Are the ones where like you kind of like this guy comes out of nowhere? He's the antithesis of Batman, and you kind of don't know for sure
because you don't know what to do with him. It's
right.
like even in Jack Nicholson's version, I mean, you know why he became the Joker, but how did he become this crazy criminal?
And that's the thing, like the big mix of it is that if you don't know where he came from or what caused him to be the Joker, it's harder to defeat
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And but that's what worries me about this movie.
But, I mean, this one thing, the fact that it's kind of like an Elseworlds thing is kind of like a classic DC comic book trope. They got, like, lots of Elseworld.
Yeah, no, that's things. Fine. I mean,
Let me just say, like, all right, as a... Greg is really into comics, so, you know, you follow everything. But, like, it seems like Marvel has a distinct plan of action of the movies they want out. Whereas DC just seems like they're just randomly throwing movies out.
There's a degree of them playing catch-up. But, I mean, we'll talk about it more when we talk about Comic-Con. But, like, the trailers that they showed give me a little bit more hope of the more cohesion.
And I agree with that. But I'm talking about, like, just this Joker movie coming out. We don't even know about the Batman movie.
That's the other thing, too. So Ben Affleck might not even be in that Batman movie. It looks like he's not going to be in it.
Yeah, I heard that.
They did. I thought they were going to announce something, which we'll get to, but they did.
But yeah, so it essentially, like, I like the concept too of having those other worlds, because for all intents and purposes, the Netflix Marvel shows don't exist in that same reality. There's no reason even. They're just tangentially there. Same thing with, like, even, like, to a degree, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, they've had a couple references, but it's like.
It's one-sided. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will reference the movies all the live long day.
That's another thing. Yeah.
Right. So it's one of those things where, like, I kind of like that they're like, oh, we have a separate world where we're doing this thing over here. But it can get confused. If you worry about confusion, that can get confusion.
You were saying De Niro, apparently, he's in talks to play a talk show host who proves instrumental to the Joker's origin. And this movie's being produced by Martin Scorsese. And the pitch was... It's envisioned as a drama more in the vein of a 70s film like Taxi Driver featuring the Joker.
I mean, here's the thing. Like,
so that's and it's supposed to take... I think it's supposed to be a period piece set in the 80s.
Like, I'd kind of be more intrigued with this if this was, like, in ties with, like, the Heath Ledger character from the Joker. You know what I mean? Like, if we heard about this, like, 3 or 4 years after The Dark Knight came out. But, like, there's no frame of reference other than Jared Leto's performance recently of the Joker. So it's like, why are they making...
And it's nothing to do with that.
We know right. It's like, it's not connected to anything that we've recently seen. That's what's so weird about this movie coming out.
Right. But, I mean, I guess if this is successful, I mean, there's classic DC things like Red Sun with, you know...
And I think part of the logic of why they're doing this is because of the success with the animated movies.
So Absolutely. Do you think, like, they're going to go the vein of, like, they're going to do these, like, movies, like, about villains? Could we see a Riddler standalone?
The animated movies that they've done are adaptations of stories that they've done in the comics. So if you look at them, and then they're not all connected. Some of them are,
mm-hmm.
other ones aren't. So it kind of seems like the route that they want to go with this, where they have the ability to tell these stories, sometimes not bound by continuity. So that's what you get. The Killing Joke does not take place in the same world as the Justice League animated stuff and all that. So. There's a degree of that. How successful it will be, this is an experiment. That's right. Kind of what it seems
to be. Because
they're
calling it, I think, DC Dark, where right. It's going to have a different logo and everything. So
Black Label, maybe? Or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's an experiment, and we'll kind of see. Like, I think there needs to be something that distinguishes them from not just being, like, copying Marvel. They tried to do that with even the
team. Right. So I guess in that aspect, I kind of appreciate they're trying something new.
And, I mean, they're getting talent. I mean, you got Phoenix... Todd Phillips and Martin Scorsese. And then Zazie Beetz from Deadpool 2 is going
to
be
in. And how you attract talent like that is to say, we'll let you play in the sandbox however you want. You can't do that if it's connected to another universe that has to speak to Justice League.
Which is why Joaquin Phoenix turned down Doctor Strange.
Right. Yeah. In other like movie news, we also had a director of Guardians of the Galaxy 3 was released by Disney from it. Now, I didn't get to read the actual tweets.
I read them.
They're old. They're like eight years old.
I don't know exactly how old they were. I just read what he said, which was
Because the story is what he tends to tweet a lot of
stupid
political opinions as of late. And was it a right wing blogger posted all this stuff to basically try to get him fired?
And it worked,
from what I understand.
Yeah.
And now apparently he's going after Patton Oswalt next.
Well, and the other even Senator Ted Cruz is, like, all about how there should be, like, some kind of legal action against James Gunn for this.
Well, okay, so, Ron,
actually do anything
So here's the thing. We kind of got a little bit off of the beginning of the discussion, but there's another thing that happened, and I think it's not all the same. So there's a difference between, and Matt Damon even tried to say this and got on all kinds of crap for it, but there's a difference between making a lewd comment to someone and touching them inappropriately.
Okay, so yeah, apparently, like, let's start with what he supposedly said.
Go on.
He supposedly...
Well, I mean, he admitted that he said all that.
He tweeted, like, these weird tweets about touching young boys or something.
I mean, he was trying to be, like, a shock comic at the time. And it wasn't funny.
No, it wasn't funny, and it wasn't... It was odd. It was almost like a drunken tweet it came across to me. But this is a little bit off topic, but sort of ties in. There's this pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers who was at the All-Star game recently. And somebody like dug up all these old tweets of him when he was 17 years old where he tweeted all these white power, anti-black, anti-gay things. But he was at the time like 16, 17 years old in, you know, high school. And when you're in high school and you have dozens of stupid friends around you, you have, everybody knows, you have racist friends around you in high school.
Yeah.
So,
in the words of Tom Jane from The Mist, he's a kid, he's supposed to be stupid.
Exactly. So he, and a lot of this, I think, ties into the fact that, like, when we grew up, this social media didn't exist.
Right.
Imagine all the stupid crap we would have done.
Oh, my God.
Had we had Twitter and Facebook and all that crap. So, where do you draw the line to where, like, it's just stupid crap, or is it worth losing your job and your career over because you just post random dumb shit?
Well, there was a recent story done by Vice News about how there's a lot of comedians that won't go to college campuses.
Yeah.
And I posted the segment because it was really kind of enlightening. They talked to some comedians, they talked to the people that program college events and why they do certain things. But it's a lot like, comedy is a thing that's supposed to, and this isn't a blank at all, because you get these people, and I think, I kind of remember what Sarah Silverman referred to it. She calls it blood in the mouth comedy, where people are like frothing because it's the wrong kind of way to take it.
Aristocrats.
Right. So it's like we use humor to basically kind of get to know people, and with the express understanding that it's not how each other are. But then you get people that kind of, so like humor is just kind of, you're breaking down barriers, and it's nothing you really shouldn't joke about. But there's things that like kind of cross, and if people take it the wrong way, which you can't control, that becomes the issue. So when you make a joke about, you know, pedophilia, for example, you kind of both understand that that's not a good thing. But if someone's sitting there like, yeah, that's a person taking it wrong. But
didn't you just see a documentary kind of about this subject?
That's the thing. It's like we're getting way too far off. We're like, humor is based on pain. So we laugh because it hurts. It's always either emotional or physical. We are reacting to someone being in pain. So the notion that you can't have anything that offends you seems to be far, far removed from basic tenets of society. Like, you're going to be offended by certain things. It doesn't give anyone license to go out and say awful, awful shit. It just means that someone's going to say something and you can't always be protected from it.
Right.
But, like, It almost seems like people are just, like, waiting in the wings, waiting, like, looking for something to pounce on. Whereas, like, I always point to, and, I mean, we talk about, I always point to Eddie Murphy's Delirious. And he points out things in that stand-up act that people joke about and talk about all the time. No one really believes that gay people are out to, try to have sex with them. But the fact that he pokes fun at that...
But it's also a product of the time.
Right, and he even makes fun of black people, makes fun of white people, he makes fun of Ralph Cramden and Ed Norton. I mean, it's like people are so sensitive now, and they look for things to jump on to, like, say, oh, look what this guy said.
And I guarantee, I don't know for sure, but this guy finding all this stuff is more than likely in response to, because Disney is the same company he works for, to Roseanne losing her.
That life. Wasn't mentioned, but that popped in
That's
my mind.
Exactly what I thought when I first saw this. So... Again, they're two separate things. What Roseanne said and what he's saying.
Now, did you hear Roseanne's big?
I saw the follow up. She doubled down.
Apparently, she said she didn't know that lady was black.
Yeah, and did you watch the video?
I didn't see the video.
She's
just saw
basically foaming at the mouth.
She is, and she's next level crazy. The woman needs some help. But again,
which Tom Arnold's been saying for years.
He has been. Poor Tom Arnold.
Fucker.
But yeah, so I mean, those are two different things. But it's like you
think she was the bitch that took the ice cube trays out of the freezer?
So, but you can't paint those in the same
brush. Kind of a sick bitch takes the ice cube trays out of the freezer?
Give me the goddamn page. All right, my thoughts on this whole thing is, I'm glad you brought up the Roseanne thing because I was thinking about it too, but I think there's a difference, and the difference is Roseanne said this a couple weeks ago. James Gunn said this almost a decade ago. It's been out there. I think this is just a lapse in Disney vetting their directors. I mean,
I think Disney was trying to maintain consistency.
I agree with that. Believe exactly that's what happened.
I don't blame Disney. It's just,
and James Gunn said he didn't blame Disney.
It's just circumstances of the times that fucked him over.
Oh no, I agree. I don't blame Disney. I just think that I feel bad for the man because
I know.
He did this 8 years ago, and all these people coming out defending him because
the entire cast of Guardians of the Galaxy have
right.
Like Michael Rooker left Twitter today.
Yeah,
you know, but we talked about before the show. Bobcat Goldthwait, he has a friendship with James Gunn. Wants his voice removed from Disney. Rides and stuff like that. Yeah, it's just like it's not a simple situation of apples and apples in this.
But I mean, it's going to be interesting because like his brother's one of the like a main part of the Guardians franchise.
Yeah.
I mean, it's honestly like as far as James Gunn goes in Hollywood, Hollywood loves a comeback story. Just take a step back. They let Mel Gibson back in for God's sake.
Yeah.
You'll get a chance again. Just.
Roman Polanski won an Oscar.
He did. So
who do we think is going to take over Guardians of the Galaxy?
I think
Taika Waititi guy, the guy that did Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
I think.
Well, interesting enough, you know, we mentioned how I saw Winter Soldier recently for the first time. I was so impressed with the movie. I would Google like who directed this movie. It's so
Caruso, bro.
It's the guys who did like you know the
they did Civil War,
Infinity War, and I'm like I was just like these guys need to be doing more of these Marvel movies.
The Winter Soldier is the best film of the Marvel.
You know they started in sitcoms. They did like Arrested Development, Community.
That's insane.
Yep.
I met them at Comic Con. They were delightful.
They were delightful.
They were the only ones not charging to.
Yeah, James. But back to James Gunn. He just needs to take a step back. And this will all blow over in 3 weeks. No one will remember this, and he'll direct some great film, and
maybe he'll go back to horror because that's what he started with. And he was like,
Slither too.
I love Slither.
Slither is fantastic.
So the big discussion that we're going to have today is related to all the literally all the crap that came out from Comic-Con,
and there was a lot.
There is a lot. So we're just going to kind of touch on some stuff. Mostly some of the trailers that we've kind of been anticipating that have finally been released.
We should try to, as a bucket list thing, like make a trip to San Diego Comic Con.
It's hard to get tickets.
A friend moved to San Diego.
I tried a couple of years ago.
They sell out like within a minute.
Well, this is what happened. The tickets went on sale like at 10 a.m. and I was on my computer at like 9:50, hitting refresh. 10:01 hit, the website crashed. So I was like, okay. I went and got a soft drink. I sat there, and I went.
I love that. We got a soft drink.
And then
calm down.
Opened the page back, and it was completely sold out.
Wow!
Because apparently, one of the things is it's hard to break in, but once you go, before you leave, you could pre-order your tickets for the following year. So it's really hard.
Like a club now, almost.
Right.
It's like season tickets.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy. Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so it's from what I hear. It's
I mean, y'all all tell me about the local Comic-Con we have. And I'm not interested in that because there's no major news, but I would go to San Diego.
You say that, but the year that they had almost the entire Avengers cast,
that was all over the national news. Yeah.
I mean, I'm just talking about like I mean, all the footage that's unveiled at San Diego. Everybody knows about San Diego Comic Con. Yeah. I would go there.
D23 is like a good counterpoint. Mm-hmm. That's the Disney version.
Oh, right.
And they unveil a lot of stuff. And
Star Wars.
Yeah, especially since Disney owns the world now.
And from what I hear, the convention center is a little bigger than San Diego.
But and soon they will own 20th Century Fox.
That's correct.
You think they'll put the Fox fanfare back on the Star Wars movie?
They could. And now they'll have 100% ownership of the original.
That's true.
Star Wars. So
speaking of Star Wars.
So Greg can hold out hope that a Blu-ray will exist of...
The original trilogy unaltered.
I could completely see them releasing. You're going to have to get a box set to get that, I think.
What? No, I could totally see Disney releasing. I don't think
anybody would care. Remember who would buy like Empire Strikes Back without the other ones?
Remember when like they did the thing where they released the Lord of the Rings trilogy and then the special, like the extended editions?
One and Y1?
The mouse loves its money. I guarantee you they'll release them as separate iterations. So you have to
I can't blame them because everybody would buy every single one.
Take my money. So it's a perfect jumping on point. One of the big surprises and things that I got
I'm the most excited about.
Star Wars The Clone Wars
is back, baby. It's
coming back.
And I don't know if that's because, like, you know, you guys watched it from its inception. I binged it from, and when I got to the end, I was just, to quote Teddy KGB, I felt so unsatisfied.
I will tell you this.
I was like, where's the conclusion? It was getting so good at the end.
If anything, Rebels is the perfect appetite whetting thing for this because you get to see kind of where Ahsoka goes, and we now get to go flashback and see how she gets where she goes. I'm very excited for this.
12 episode.
I'm wondering if this is going to be the conclusion or we're going to do a...
Well, because I know that Filoni, apparently he had scripts for another season that never happened.
And Anakin looks older.
A little.
And I wonder if this is going to be just one season and then done. They're going to finally conclude it.
Probably.
Or,
depends on how it does.
Or they get... Well, I don't... I don't care, but
the Clone Wars was doing fine, and then they had the acquisition, so they changed stuff. So I just
want a conclusion to the Clone Wars because it was so well done. Like it really came into its own.
Absolutely.
Remember when we first watched that first Clone Wars movie? When we
Sky
were like,
Guy.
The,
oh my
and
god!
And the Ahsoka character, we were like, God, this character sucks. And
talk about it.
She became such an awesome character.
And that's largely the credit of Dave Filoni. So much like Mark Hamill recently, like within the last week, has said that like he thinks that Filoni should get a movie.
That would be.
And if not to start anything, like if they ever do replace Kathleen Kennedy, he's the one that should replace.
Well, he's the heir apparent because he learned from George Lucas directly. And George Lucas worked on Clone Wars every day.
I mean, y'all are more into it, but he seems like he has more of a distinct vision of his plan than like.
And he also he knows how to integrate things in. To it, like Grand Admiral Thrawn's a great example.
Right, like
that.
Little things that'll link
like,
it all
how
together.
How do we make this work
right.
And give it the best version of things? So, I trust it.
I mean, what he did with Ahsoka and Darth Vader in that second season. I mean,
very excited for that. Two other trailers that I kind of busted up about were Aquaman and Shazam.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the Shazam trailer because I don't know shit about the trailer.
It's
or the guy
awesome.
Or
it's big meets Superman.
Like my wife could care less about DC movies, and when I showed her Shazam, she's like, "Oh, we're going to see that opening day."
It was I had a genuine good time just watching the trailer.
Yeah,
it was. It's really so. I'll try to fill you in on what Shazam is. It originally called Captain Marvel.
Wasn't that Shaq?
No, that was Kazam. And he was a genie.
That's so confusing.
So it's a 12 to 13 year old boy named Billy Batson, who is an orphan, and he basically runs into this wizard who's looking for a new champion,
played by Jamin Hansu.
Yeah, and it's the wizard's name Shazam.
Oh
yeah.
Shit!
So he basically uses his nostril powers to give him this lightning bolt.
His nostril powers.
Jamin Hansu has some big nostrils.
He does.
That's a sexy son of a bitch, man.
But
he was from that Janet Jackson commercial from the 80s. I mean, not commercial, the video.
By saying the wizard's name, Billy Batson turns into this idealized version of a superhero with all these powers, like the wisdom of Solomon and like the strength of Hercules and all kinds of different stuff.
Something with Zeus, too. Right?
Yeah, all kinds of different, the stamina of Atlas, all kinds of stuff. So he becomes the champion and everything. So basically the wizard, as far as I'm understanding in this iteration of it, is going to basically leave him with no instruction manual. So he's got to try to figure things out on his own with the other orphans in the family that he's in. And it's always been a concept that I've really, really loved. To see this coming to screen and to see it, Zach Levi is the perfect casting for this.
Yeah. Is it more of a comedy?
It's a lighthearted.
It's about finding heroism and through the eyes of this little boy who
like an Ant-Man type tone-wise?
Maybe a little
bit. Yeah, I can see that. But I love the trailer.
And the kid that was in it, who's the looks like the best friend or whatever. I kept looking at him like this kid looks familiar.
From
it was the kid from It that played Eddie in It, the new It. Okay. Yeah.
And I think the director, he's from a horror background, isn't? I think he directed Lights Out.
I never saw that.
And is it Sandberg or something? His name?
Andy Sandberg?
David Sandberg.
David Sandberg.
Yeah, Lights Out and Annabelle.
Yeah.
Actually, it's Annabelle Creation.
Yeah. That's the one that screwed you up.
Yeah. I don't like talking about that.
I don't talk about that.
I did see a Comic Con. They announced Annabelle 3, but I don't talk about that. I'll go see it, but
you don't want to talk about it.
Mark Strong's a villain, isn't it?
Yeah, he is. Dr. Savannah. Aquaman.
I called it like from the very beginning. I think Aquaman's going to make a shit ton of money.
It's kind of a tone of Black Panther.
A little, yeah.
Except almost Aquaman's in the Killmonger position.
What is very the trailer looks like what I wanted Green Lantern to be, in the sense that it embraces all the craziness of it being underwater and all that kind of stuff. I can tell you the Black Manta character that you see him briefly in the trailer looks like they ripped him straight out of the comic. Same thing with Ocean Master. Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for this, and it's cool to have a different tone, like almost a fantasy element.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Plus all the sharks, Ryan. We know how much you love sharks.
I love sharks. And I love the fact that Jason Momoa is just having the time of his life promoting this, being a part of this. Whether you, like, I've heard some people say they were kind of disappointed with his performance in Justice League. That's fine. I get that. He wasn't the main character, so whatever.
And that movie, from a production point, was kind of a mess. But
right, they had problems, but his enthusiasm is just so intoxicating. Like, he just loves what he's doing.
And I think part of it, too, is, like, and that's one of the big challenges with any writer that gets Aquaman, is that people think of Aquaman as a joke, and it's like, I'm going to prove to you why he's not. And that's one of the draws from Momoa, is, like, I'm going to show you why Aquaman's a badass. So, the trailer, I've watched it about 3 or 4 times since it came out, and I love it.
Yeah, I like that scene in the aquarium. It kind of reminded me of Harry Potter with the snake.
Yeah, I was thinking exactly the same thing.
Which is a good jumping on point for the second trailer for Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. What did you guys think?
Right, I thought it looked awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so during the summer, my kids being out of school, I have been showing my children the Harry Potter films from the beginning to the end. And we are on the Deathly Hallows Part 1. And we just started that one, and then this trailer came out, and I watched it, and I was just, like, amazed. I was like, this is fantastic. This is right in tone with the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah. And the scene in the trailer where it's Johnny Depp as Grindelwald, and he's talking to that big group, when they first showed it, I'm like, oh, he's on trial, like they had in one of the other Harry Potter movies. And they showed it, and it's like, oh, wait, no, this is a gigantic room of his followers. I was like, this is going to...
Yeah, like the first Fantastic Beast was good, but I felt like it was more of a standalone, sort of like a wink. This is
a Harry Potter story.
Yeah, but this looks really, really good.
Yeah,
I like the ridiculous scene and that kid that they got to play young Eddie Redmayne.
I thought that they just like computer generated a young Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah,
and I like got really excited that they showed Nicholas Flamel.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
The guy who created the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah.
Or the Philosopher's Stone, depending on what country you're living in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I said it to the first one. Like, I love the original Harry Potter books and the movies. I like that Fantastic Beasts was kind of a world apart from it. And
right.
It was different, and I got some glee out of it. This makes it, you know, seem like they could be a saga on par with that. Yeah. And that's what I'm so excited to see this next movie.
And did you see at Comic-Con, Johnny Depp came out in character as Grindelwald?
Of course he did, because it's Johnny Depp.
And apparently when he was leaving or coming to his panel, there was a big thing about how he and Amber Heard missed each other by like 3 minutes, and it was going to be very, very awkward.
I'm sure.
Because she was there with the Aquaman panel.
Awkwardness with the X.
In other Beast news, Godzilla, King of Monsters, had a new trailer. This is one I actually have not gotten to watch. Okay. I saw like a brief little piece of it.
It's very dark. You don't see the creatures very well, except Godzilla. No. You see him quite well.
Kind of like the first Godzilla movie?
Yeah. Millie Bobby Brown looks like, you know, Millie Bobby Brown.
I did hear a theory, because is it Charles Durrance, you know, from Last Action Hero and Game of Thrones, he's in it. There's a rumor that he's playing Tom Hiddleston from Kong. Like,
oh, really?
As an older person.
You don't see him until, like, the very end of the trailer.
But you think that
it's possible. I mean, I don't know how far in the future this just takes
place. I mean, that would have been during... I mean, that one was during Vietnam, so...
Right. I hope they get this right, because... this is a potential huge franchise. Was it Universal?
I still haven't seen the Kong Skull Island. I saw the first Godzilla. I really enjoyed it.
Skull Island is amazing. Like,
I really enjoyed it. I liked Godzilla better, but I really enjoyed Kong.
Really? I like Kong better, which maybe it's because I wasn't expecting much. But I love the whole Vietnam element to it. I wasn't expecting that.
I love all the Brie Larson.
Well, who doesn't? Yeah. Godzilla, I'm very hopeful for. You never know what you're going to get with Godzilla.
I mean,
lots of chocolates.
The Roland Emmerich Godzilla was kind of a wink-wink. If you've had a few drinks, you'll enjoy it. But if you're judging it on a film...
What did you see, old man?
I've never really seen any of the old Godzilla stuff. I mean, you know, I saw the Matthew Broderick thing.
They're stupid, but if you watched it as a kid, you would love it.
But when the one that came out, you know, a few years ago, in this universe, I didn't realize how excited I could get until Godzilla ripped that other thing's mouth open and breathed his fire or whatever. Yeah. I was like, holy crap.
I've always liked giant robots fighting,
yeah,
especially in anime. But that's what I love about Godzilla is, like, it's a big giant thing destroying shit. Yeah. It's like almost like the humans are ants.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited for this. We also had a trailer. This is kind of funny. When we were preparing for this, we almost forgot about this, and Glenn was the hero of the day and reminded us that Glass. Trailer I've been waiting for has finally had a premiere.
I just hope at some point in the movie, Bruce Willis says, Glass!
What's your shit about Glass? Let me just say, for the record, that I am more hopeful that this movie is good than any movie I can remember in recent history. I loved Unbreakable. I remember the first time I saw Unbreakable, I thought it was it was groundbreaking, and I thought it was great. Split, I didn't even know it was related to Unbreakable.
I didn't either.
What an amazing surprise.
Yeah.
I thought Split was very, very good, and then the twist at the end just put me over the top. I'm so hopeful, because with M. Night, we all know we're either going to get a grand slam home run or a punt single that leaves.
Do you remember?
However, this one, I mean, it's not just M. Night. He's teamed up with Blumhouse and Jason Blum
who
make these cheap movies. So this actually doesn't need to make a whole lot to be profitable.
Right.
I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about it being great.
Remember when Unbreakable came out on DVD and you and I were watching all the special features and we were talking about how he said he originally conceived of it as like a trilogy and, you know, he just settled on doing this one movie. And you and I talked about, I wonder what those other ones were going to be.
Yeah.
To find out that they were split in this one.
Yeah. And it looks like McAvoy's character is going to have even more personalities in this one.
Yeah.
I mean, the trailer just
had me like... And it looks like he turns into the Incredible Hulk at one point.
I mean, I was giddy watching the trailer. I mean, just the whole, like, the scenes with David Dunn and his like, cape and everything. I mean, it's just... I just love the fact that they implore, like, comic book and then realism to it. And making it sort of believable, it's something you haven't seen in movies before. And people always ask for, you know, oh, we want to see something different. Well, as much as M. Night Shyamalan can suck sometimes, he does try new things
every time
he goes out there. And this is something we haven't seen before.
It's like he really is somebody that has been on both ends of the spectrum.
Right.
He's been amazing and he's been awful.
And that's why I kind of respect him, because... He could play it safe and just do, you know, but he's been trying new things and sometimes he's bombed. And
I like that he was humbled by the other experience. He didn't come back like a raging jerk. He came back and said,
yeah,
let me go back to basics and figure out what works for me as a director.
That movie he did with those kids going to see their grandparents.
Was it The Visit or whatever it was?
Yeah, that was incredible and scary as hell.
And I don't think I even realized that was him until we went and saw the movie and then it said,
oh, wow.
It was like a found footage movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. From the big screen to the small screen, there was a couple of very choice things that we would be remiss not to talk about, including The Walking Dead Season 9.
All right.
Was it 9 or 8?
It's like 9.
Okay. 9.
I mean, the trailer had me really excited, but also terrified.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't get to watch the entirety of the trailer.
It's like an almost 6-minute trailer.
It's really long. And
they tend to do that every year. My big thing is that they've confirmed that Andy Lincoln is going to be exiting.
Yeah.
He said, I'm not done with the character.
Which I don't understand.
Maybe they'll give him an end where he's not going to become a walker or die. Maybe he'll go off into the sunset.
He'll do like a Morgan thing.
Well, here's what I'm wondering.
Come back. But I know the stories that are coming because they cast Alpha, which
I want to talk about. Because Alpha and her, which is going to be Samantha Morton, which is amazing. And by the way, I've talked about this in Harlots. Her breasts are a lot bigger than you thought. So,
and they'll be covered in dead flesh.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So, here's the thing. Alpha in the comics makes a very profound statement and takes out some serious characters in a dramatic way. And some of them are still alive. So do you think, Greg, do you think, like, it's possible Rick could be one of the ones that they throw in there as one of the dramatic statements?
It's entirely possible, and I would hate that decision.
I'm on the fence, because, like, if it's what you're saying where Rick goes away, because, I mean, he doesn't have any kids holding him down anymore.
No, he doesn't, and that's the other thing, too. That might be why.
He's going to spring break.
his Rumspringer.
He's going to go look for Morgan.
He doesn't have any reason keeping him building this community anymore, because he's not building it for Carl. Like, he's doing it for Carl's memory. So I could see him leaving for that reason. But I know the stories that follow Alpha and the Whispers and everything that's coming, because I'm reading it now. And this Walking Dead is Rick and Carl's story. We've already lost Carl, and to lose Rick, it's kind of
Didn't Robert Kirkman say, like, the show and the comics have really split now?
They really have, because, like, he said the comic is, it's Rick's story. When Rick's no longer there, the comic ends.
There is a character who's part of the Whisperers, a young girl who gets linked with Carl in a big way, and that's not going to happen. So I don't know how she's going to link with.
Maybe it'll be a boy, and it'll link with Enid.
I don't know. I'm very intrigued. And the characters they've added, by the way, for The Walking Dead the next season are really good actors. There's the guy from Fantastic Beasts. And I forgot the other one. But, like, it's
yeah, Dan Fogler.
I mean, they're great actors and actresses, so I'm curious. It's a very pivotal season for The Walking Dead.
Yep.
Yeah. And then another pivotal news, we have the first, like, full trailer where we get to see some of the 13th Doctor and Doctor Who, the first female to play the role.
I'm excited.
I'm really, really excited.
She's cute.
A woman?
Yeah, it's the first Doctor that I've been like, can I take you out?
Not a woman!
Some biscuits and tea. Monk.
But, you know, if David Tennant came and ran some lines on you, you know you'd want to...
He's a lovely man. But yeah, like Jodie Whittaker, I loved her on
Broadchurch.
I also loved her in her little scene in was it the thing with Anne Hathaway, and she was in the movie singing "Angels" by Robbie Williams. The Anne Hathaway, like Anne Hathaway has an English accent with Jim Sturgess.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I never saw it.
But she in one scene, she's in the background singing "Angels," and it always made me laugh.
Let me ask you, because I don't watch Doctor Who, but I've always been intrigued by this casting of them going to a female doctor. Has there been a lot of blowback of people saying, "Oh, this is all just a PC move"? And
not a lot.
They kind of was when they first announced it, but now that's kind of died down, and now everyone just seems excited.
Well, yeah, and in England, it's an English show, so a lot of it in England, people are very excited. The thing that would make English people, like, go nuts is if you cast an American as Doctor Who. That would be the one, like, line.
Well, that's kind of funny.
One thing
actually.
That they did, if they had planned to go with a female for the Doctor, one really smart thing they did in the past few seasons is there's another character who's one of the villains who's also a Time Lord like the Doctor, who changes all the time, and that character became a woman. So it was like, you knew it was possible for this to happen.
Well,
so
that was other characters too. In the background, one of the generals on Gallifrey.
Yeah.
Turn into a woman.
You're right.
So maybe they've clearly established this as a possibility.
Not a woman.
Not a woman.
But yeah, I love that we keep a Scottish accent for this. It sounds like she's got a Scottish accent again. I love that we get a new sonic screwdriver. I'm very excited to have three companions.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what she's going to do with the role.
And this might be actually a good time for people to start watching if you haven't watched it, because I think I've found that whenever there's a new companion is when it's a good time to start watching, not so much when there's a new doctor.
We got to remember to let me know when this season starts.
Okay.
I might check out the first episode.
I think you should just watch all the ones, like all the new ones, because it starts off with your boy, Christopher Eccleston.
Fucking Binbag.
Fucking Binbag.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's October, I think, is when it starts.
Okay.
So it's soon, in the next couple of months.
Yeah.
Sweet.
What else is going on in Comic-Con?
Well, we had a couple of trailers for the CW shows, Flash and Arrow. Was there a Legends of Tomorrow?
There was.
I didn't get to see
it. It showed Constantine joining the team, basically. I mean, it showed, like, them at Woodstock, and, you know, it's the fun show like it usually is. Arrow showed Oliver in prison, and kind of everything that's been going on, because it's a few months later. Flash, you know, integrated their daughter from the future, and Supergirl. There's going to be a new character that's going to be the first kind of transgendered character on.
Yeah, it's a character.
Really?
Yeah.
As a superhero or just a character?
Well, it's kind of, it's the character, the name of the character was actually a character from Legion of Superheroes that was a female in the future, but it's kind of, it seems like they're combining a couple of characters because there was a transgender character in Legion of Superheroes.
So there have been transgender, like, comic book characters, superheroes?
I mean, not many, but that there in Legion of Superheroes, there was a transgender character.
Nice.
So, but they're all, you know, picking up right where they left off. And then there was a small teaser for the crossover. It doesn't show any footage, but it was kind of cool the way it was put together, where it was blending like the shows with the comic book panels.
Nice. On the other side, we finally got some of the details about the DC, like, all like basically DC's All Access thing, where you're going to have like a yearly subscription you can get a discount on, or $7.99 a month for some of these shows. And there was a trailer for Titans, and I'm going to let you take the lead on this, Glenn. You kind of mirror a lot of what I feel on this.
Wait, before we talk about that, just to reiterate, apparently Clone Wars is only going to be available on the Disney streaming
service. Disney.
That's true, yes.
Correct. So be prepared for that, all listeners. All right, go ahead.
So yeah, the DC All Access is what they're calling it, correct? And they're leading off with this live-action Titans. And I didn't think the trailer was very good.
No,
it just... It seemed like they were being gritty for the sake of being gritty. Like
What they're basing it off of, where Robin was at this point in his development, he was very angry at Batman. So I like the F Batman part of the trailer, which is what a lot of people are talking about. I was waiting to see in motion the Starfire and Beast Boy characters because I was trying to reserve judgment because of the pictures we saw. It didn't do anything to win me over there.
What do you think about Robin, like, executing people?
That kind of bothers me, too.
Yeah.
If that's kind of... Like, I want to see it in context, sure, but, like... Sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm a little concerned with it. I hope we get other, you know, stuff that's better on the... Because right now, I can't justify paying for it.
Well, I know there's that. There's... they're doing a live-action Swamp Thing.
Yeah, Doom Patrol as well.
Doom Patrol.
I didn't watch the trailer, but it reminded me of Suicide Squad, just the pics I saw of it.
It was just very dark and grimy. I mean, and
like some of the, DC, some of the costumes look very, very good.
Yeah. The Robin costume was good.
Right. I mean, the Hawk and Dove costumes and everything, too. And that's the thing. A lot in the background... That's why I'm kind of confused, because I don't, like... There's a lot of scenes with Hawk and Dove beating the ever-loving shit out of people. Which,
but I mean,
is,
it was just so dark and disgusting. It was like Bourbon Street after a parade and...
No, you know, lucky dog stands, you know, are open.
Just, I just wanted to take a shower when I was... It was just, I don't know, dirty.
So yeah, I'm that didn't inspire me with confidence, but I'm interested to kind of maybe do a free trial and catch a few episodes. I feel a lot like this. There was a... I was very excited for Valiant Comics was putting out some web series, and they cast Ninjak versus the... And then I finally got to see some of the episodes and was so massively disappointed in that effort. This kind of makes me feel that way. Mm-hmm. But you can't talk about Comic-Con without comics, and there's a couple of really cool things that came out of it. A lot of it has to do with creative changes. For the first time in a long time, I mean, that I can remember, Grant Morrison's going to be writing Green Lantern now after Rob Venditti leaves. And Grant Morrison, very popular for doing also Superman, a lot of weird stuff, Batman Arkham Asylum. Interesting choice for this. And he said it's going to be a lot more like these are space cops and there's going to be cops on the beat, not necessarily these big overarching stories. So I'm kind of interested to see his take on it. He's now had Batman for a long period. He's had Superman for a long period. It'll be interesting to see where he takes Green Lantern. We also have Kelly Sue DeConnick taking over Aquaman, which is going to be interesting to see a female writer at the helm of Aquaman. Apparently a lot of big changes are going to be taking place having to do with his origin and things like that. And the other big news from Marvel that I kind of was interested in is they announced X-Men Black, which is not a series so much as it is a bunch of one-shots centered around villains. So there'll be a creative team on a Magneto one-shot. There'll be, you know, White Queen and things like that.
I thought he was going to say an X-Men about a bunch of black guys.
It's going to be about Storm and her family.
Storm and Bishop.
Honestly, I wouldn't mind reading that, to be honest with you.
So yeah, that is an interesting take on that. What's good about that series, too, is you can pick and choose which ones you want based on creative teams and characters. But those are some of the bigger things that came out in comics news. Good. I know you want to talk a little bit about this, especially since we mentioned it just last week. we had sent out some love to John Schnapp, and he has passed away.
Oh, yeah, this one hurt. I kind of wrote this on my social media that I don't know, these podcasters and YouTubers. It's funny because like every Monday and Wednesday when I go to work, I listen to this Collider Heroes one, and you really feel like you get to know these. Even though I never, you know, never met any of them, but they just, I don't know, just listening, like, you know, they do like us, you know, they just sort of talk about things they like, and you really feel like you get to know these people. And yeah, John Schnapp, unfortunately, he passed away.
This is the guy who directed
The Death of Superman Lives. What happened?
Conducts most of the interviews and all that.
Yeah, it's all him. In which I'm so glad I got the Blu-ray that he autographed for me. And But apparently his fiance and producing partner, 16 years, Holly, she put out a thing that he apparently had a massive stroke, and they had removed the blood clot from his carotid artery, and they had him on life support, and there was no brain activity left. So they when they weren't releasing anything, they were basically leaving him on life support so all of his loved ones could go and tell him goodbye. And then when they removed him from life support, he passed on. And I went on this rant recently about toxic fandom, and you know, sometimes you go down a rabbit hole, which I did over the weekend reading, you know, all these things about everyone that met him and watched him, and so many people sent so many positive things, and this is what the internet's supposed to be. People sticking together and rallying around something like this. And I'm just going to mention it here. Holly, his wife, there's a GoFundMe page to for his final expenses. So anyone listening to this that was a fan of John Schnapp, go just Google it. And there was a bunch of stuff at Comic-Con. Kevin Smith ended his panel by talking about him, because apparently they had been working on a TV series kind of based on The Death of Superman Lives, where they were going to do each episode about these movies that almost happened that fell apart. And Kevin Smith helped them, so I don't know if they may go on to talk about Clerks 3, but, you know, I'll end this way. He always ended his show saying, go to your local comic book shop, so support comic book shops, and, you know, rest in peace.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
So now it is time to nominate our awesome villagers for the week.
So for my pick, I went on Instagram, it was like 2 days ago, and I saw a very handsome man, Jason Momoa, doing a selfie video on a rock cliff. And he was like, hey guys, I've got some great news. I'll tell you about it in a little bit. And then he jumped off the cliff with a cell phone in his hand and went underwater and swam up to a camera and held his cell phone in front of the camera saying, Aquaman trailer coming out tomorrow. And it's just like, Jason Momoa is just, I just love the way the guy has embraced Aquaman. His portrayal of Khaleesi's husband in Game of Thrones was only for like, what, half a season? But it still resonates with females everywhere because he was the manliest of men. And, you know, I mean, is he the greatest of actor? No. But he reminds me a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger. He understands he's not the best actor, but
he knows what he's good at.
Right. He knows what his strengths are, and he has a great time doing what he's doing. And he is the perfect choice for Aquaman. And I'm so excited, and I'm hopeful for this movie. And I'm picking Jason Momoa just because of his embrace of the character and the way he seems to be having so much fun with what he's doing.
I can't argue with that. Similarly, I'm going to nominate the Nomulus.
Chuck the Nomulus.
I'm going to nominate Zachary Levi. Because again, I think it was perfect casting for shit, but also like Chuck was a series that Glenn got me into. He was phenomenal in that show.
It's available on Amazon Prime now.
He was not good in Alvin and the Chipmunks, the Squeakquel.
But yes. just so
but
you know.
Was it that he was not good in it, or was it just the movie was
everything,
just awful?
Everything. Him, the movie, it was all bad.
He was getting tangled.
But similarly, like to kind of like what Chris Hardwick's done for like the nerd community is what Zach Levi's done too. He's been at Comic-Con every year. Doing different things that kind of get the communities up and
I like
together.
That he has a party for people that couldn't get tickets.
Right, yeah.
He does that every year.
That may be us in the future.
And let's also mention that he is a local boy, too. Mm-hmm.
He is from Louisiana.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He's from Lake Charles, I think. Yeah.
I ain't shit going on out there.
That's why he left.
So yeah, I mean, I love the guy, and I can't wait to see him get big things done in Shazam. So
yep,
Johnny boy.
I'm gonna go with Lily James, who was
she's pretty.
Yeah, kind of the star of this new Mamma Mia movie, which the movie would have been almost unwatchable if she wasn't in it. And I mean, she made it very, very watchable because it's, I don't know, she was really good in Downton Abbey, which is the first thing I saw her in, and then she's just kind of blowing up. She got cast as the lead in the Cinderella live action movie. She was the lead in female lead in Baby Driver, which she was great in, and then she just kind of stole every scene that she was in. She's got that charisma that you kind of can't take your eyes off of her. So, Lily James.
She's pretty.
She is.
And I'm going to nominate Mr. Henry Cavill, or Cavill, however you want to pronounce it.
Superman.
I mean, he's got Mission Impossible coming out next week, but I just talked about, you know, the unfortunate passing of John Schnepp, and Henry Cavill personally went and sent on Instagram and tweeted out a rest in peace and a little soliloquy about him. And for someone that did a movie about Superman getting eulogized by the current Superman, that broke me down, and I will admit I cried like a baby when I read it. And I'm going to nominate him, Henry Cavill, for being an awesome gentleman with a sexy mustache.
Speaking of which, okay, I watched Justice League recently on HBO, mm-hmm. and it seems like they did more work on the mustache to make it like it looks.
Or maybe just because it's not on the big screen, maybe?
It's possible, but, like, yeah. It didn't look the same as it did. Take a look at it, because I know, like, you and I talked about it a lot.
Because it was very, like,
it
was obvious. Very,
like, it almost looked like what Conan O'Brien used to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Henry Cavill's my nominee.
So if you had to vote for someone else other than yours, gentlemen?
I would nominate Zach. I would go with Zach Levi. Because Chuck was my jam.
All right, yeah. If I'm being honest, I want to vote for somebody who's no one's nominated. And I know we talked about not doing that. I want to vote for Jonathan Schnepp.
Okay, I was going to nominate him, but we said not to nominate.
I know, but for some reason.
We already broke that rule, though. I mean, I forgot about it.
Fisher. I mean, I feel like the reason you picked Henry Cavill was because of what Jonathan Schnepp meant to him. And to me, it speaks more to the fact that he meant that much to Henry Cavill. He meant that much to Kevin Smith. To
meant
you,
to a lot of people. Like,
and he was one of us.
He invented a term for people like us called sweaty. And he said, you know,
what the fuck is that?
Because he said, like, he said, you get so caught up in talking about something, you get so excited, and you just, like, he said, it's just like a big sweaty nerd sort of gasm. But he meant it in a positive way, which, right. If you look it up, you know, that's what he always called his followers, the people that read his stuff.
I don't
he
know.
Called them sweaties.
I don't even know what the guy looks like, but the emotion that he emits from the people that know him. I mean, I have no problem with that at all either.
That makes me very happy.
So this is our first awesome villager that no one nominated.
We did.
So John Schnepp, for everything that you were and everything that you're going to be in the future, this is a man who I guarantee you his story is going to inspire many people to do what he did.
I hope so, because like I saw that documentary he made, and I mean I didn't know it was from as a fanboy made that, right. And it's a great movie.
I'm telling you, go check out some of his old stuff on Collider. Collider Heroes was a show, and it was tearing me up because this whole today it was just people giving, you know, old stories about.
But
it,
so. I will send props to Henry Cavill for doing
absolutely.
That because
all the nominees I probably would have voted not with Henry Cavill surprisingly because I think he's going to get nominated again. Because
he's so gorgeous.
Possibly next week after Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
a sexy
I
son
probably
would have
went with Momoa, but like I can't. This is a good job, Ryan.
Yeah, good job, Ryan. 100%. I think this is the first nominee to get 4 votes because none of us nominated.
We didn't do anything, so we all just picked him.
Yeah.
And I can't think of a better person. I mean, I don't. The thing that stands out to me is that I don't know anything about him, but I can see just from the way Glenn talks about him and the way that movie just resonated with people, and
his presence is evident, and that's the
exactly.
And I mean, he's directed, like, he did a show called Metalocalypse that a lot of people remember him from. He actually directed a bunch of animated Black Panther cartoons.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I'm
cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so, guys.
Wherever you are, Schnepp. You know.
The village nominated you.
Yes.
The whole village.
You honorary elder. It's going to do it for us this week here at the Village. We ran a little long today, guys, so we hope you appreciate all the Comic-Con.
It's Comic-Con week.
Yep. And that's set fitting because John Schnepp's show always went over.
That was well, good deal.
Always did.
Good deal.
Yep.
All right, guys. We will see you next week. This has been Greg.
Glenn.
John.
Ryan.
Stay sweating.